You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Eileen in North Carolina, and her question is about a client who is partially deaf and speaks a different language. So really interesting scenario. And Eileen, thank you so much for sharing this and processing this with us. I'm really excited to dive into this. So I'm going to read parts of her email and then we'll dive in. Hi, Dr. Hicks. I'm a clinical counseling student. It's so funny. I'm going on a tangent here for a second, but it's so funny when people refer to me as Dr. Hicks because no one even at my practice calls me that. Like, I'm Miss Brenna everywhere. And so I still find it so weird when, like, I hear Dr. Hicks, it doesn't really register that that's to me. So anyway, you all please feel free to just say hi, Brenna, when you email me. I appreciate the respect that Dr. Hicks, you know, has, but I'm really okay with Brenna. Okay, I'm back on track. I'm a clinical counseling student who is doing my internship. I appreciate your podcast. I've learned a lot by listening to them. In my internship, I was assigned the case of a partially deaf girl. I only have 8 sessions to work with her. So far, the girl shows symptoms of anxiety caused by the frustration that people do not understand her. She's a girl who comes from Central America, and the little amounts of language she has is Spanish. My first language is Spanish, meaning Eileen's first language. However, my biggest concern is that my little experience working with play therapy, and I will only have 8 therapy sessions with her. I know it's a complicated case, but I appreciate any advice. All right. So Eileen, thank you for this. It's really interesting. I'm going to kind of give big picture thoughts, and then I'll more specifically answer your question. It's very interesting to me that anytime a child has a physiological or physical issue, in other words, they have congenital issues, they have developmental issues, they have medical issues, they have been diagnosed with illnesses, they've had surgeries, they have vision problems, hearing problems, speech problems, they were born prematurely and they're very small for their age. You name it. If there is something about their physical person that is different from their peers, it's almost always a ticket to behavioral and emotional and mental health struggles. And here's my hypothesis. This is just over 20 years of observing. I don't know that I can give you any details to back this up from data, but here are my thoughts. Kids know that they're different. Kids know that they struggle where other kids don't. And kids know that their experiences are not universal. And their natural instinct is to say, I'm screwed up. I'm broken. There's something wrong with me. I'm a failure. I can't do things. I'm bad at that. I'm stupid. Fill in the blank. Very negative, critical self-dialogue. And therefore, their identity, their worth, their confidence, their esteem, it's next to nothing. I would argue that her anxiety caused by the frustration that people do not understand her is very, very accurate there, because she knows that not only is she partially deaf, but if you've ever interacted with someone who is deaf, their speech is different because they can't hear themselves and they can't hear others. So they learn language, but it is a different form of speaking. So then you add on the layer that she comes from Central America and her native language is Spanish. She's now living in an English-speaking country. It's just layer upon layer upon layer of I'm different. And to a child, different is bad. Different is always bad. They're very black and white. They're very concrete thinkers. That's why they play out good versus bad so frequently in the playroom, because they have to resolve the fact that you are good and bad as a human. You can't be one extreme or the other. There's always a blend of both. So I am capable and I'm incapable. I'm smart and I'm not smart. I'm needing power and I don't always need power. I'm good and I'm bad. This is what kids wrestle with in the playroom, because the dichotomy of life is very confusing to kids that don't have abstract reasoning. So that's kind of big picture thoughts based on this specific child. And then now we'll talk through your specific question, Eileen. Anxiety, really common presentation in a situation like this. And the best case scenario is that CCPT is really, really well suited for highly anxious kids. So even in 8 sessions, there will likely be a reduction of anxiety to a degree, which is going to be very helpful for her. And then the small language she does have is Spanish, but you speak Spanish. So there's the connection. Although I've said this before, but I think it's helpful to point out, there is a study coming out of UNT, dissertation research, that shows that the therapist and the child do not even have to speak the same language for CCPT to be effective. So even Eileen, if you didn't speak Spanish, that would not be a deal breaker here because the relationship trumps everything. And then your concern is that your little experience working with play therapy. Well, if you express the be with attitudes, if you say you can play with all the toys in most of the ways that you'd like, in Spanish, of course. I was going to say in Spanish, and then I'm like, the rest of my audience will have no idea what I'm saying. So you can play with all the toys in most of the ways that you'd like. And then you give the permission and the freedom and the autonomy that the CCPT playroom affords. You provide the security and the safety and the unconditional acceptance that your relationship with the child affords. And even in only 8 sessions, that child will experience something that she likely has never experienced before, which is, I'm completely at peace. I'm completely loved. I'm completely accepted. I can do what I need to do. I can become a better version of myself. That's the goal. And when we have a scenario like this, we know we only have 8 sessions. We know it's not enough. But this is what I've settled on. And I was actually talking about this on one of my coaching calls a little while ago. It used to really bother me if I knew that I was going to have a very short amount of time with kids and or for whatever reason, I only got a short amount of time with them, meaning going in, I didn't know. But, you know, we're 8 weeks in and all of a sudden the family calls me and says, my husband just took a job in California. We're going to be moving in 2 weeks. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I only get 10 weeks with this kid. Or, you know, sorry, we're no longer able to continue because violin practice conflicts or whatever. So when you all of a sudden lose opportunity to work with a child, that used to really, really get under my skin. Not that I was angry, just that I felt so bad that that child did not get to have the full amount of sessions that we know are usually needed. But here's an encouragement to Eileen and to all of you. I have often reframed that for myself and said, even if I only had 1 hour with that child, it was a gift to me. It was a gift to the child. And it was a gift that I hope that that child will carry with them. Man, this one time I went to this playroom and I was with this lady and it was so much fun and I got to do whatever I wanted. And she was so loving and she was so understanding and she understood how I felt and she gave me choices and she encouraged me. Now, is she going to use those words? No. But there is an experience of a child being in a child-centered playroom with a child-centered play therapist. And so even only 8 sessions, that is a gift to her. And it allows her to start to work on some of the things that she needs to work on. Will she address all of them to their end? No, but she'll address what she needs to a degree. And she will be better for it. I might argue, I'm kind of now not answering your question anymore. I'm kind of just talking out loud. I might argue to your internship site to, I don't really know what the scenario is. I'm not sure if it's a private practice or an agency or an organization, or I don't really know what the structure is. But I might argue for more sessions. I might see if mom or dad or caregiver is willing to continue to bring her to you and use insurance or pay out of pocket, or I don't really know what the options are, but it only, you know, you can only be told no. Never hurts to ask. So in advocacy for her, you could probably present a case that she needs more than 8 sessions. And, you know, maybe you only get 4 more, but 12 is better than 8. So that's just my thought. I would advocate for more and see what can happen there. Maybe you could get a grant. Maybe someone could sponsor her. Maybe the local community, I don't know what the acronym is, but it's like the American Association for Deaf and Hard of Hearing or whatever. I don't know what the acronym is and what the association is called, but see if there's a local branch and someone could, you know, provide the funds to allow her to continue to have services. You can think outside the box and see what you can make happen to give her some more sessions. And that is true for all of us. I'm kind of, I guess, pep talking right now, but don't ever take no for an answer at first go. So someone says, you can only do this, or you're not allowed to do this, or, you know, this is not going to be okay and you're going to have to do this. While we respect authority and we understand that there's a hierarchy where we are, unless we run our own business, I think that our job requires us to advocate, even if it goes against what we've been told. And if the answer is still no, and you've tried everything that you can think of, then you go home and you go to bed and you know that you've done everything you could and it didn't work out how you wanted it. But if you do nothing, you'll never know. So don't let bureaucracy or politics or the hierarchy or you being an intern or you not being licensed or you being new to the field or whatever our hangups are, don't let those get in the way, because we are there and we have one reason, which is to make sure that that child has what she needs. So sometimes we advocate on her behalf, and sometimes that opens doors, and then we're really excited about the possibilities. So there was your pep talk for the day. All right. I love y'all. Eileen, thank you so much for the question. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.